You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
You would think at this moment, during the trial of Derek Chauvin, he's the cop who murdered George Floyd by kneeling on his neck for 9 minutes in Minneapolis. You would think at this moment, cops all over the country would be erring on the side of not pulling black men over for having air fresheners hanging from their rear view mirrors. And then, you know, accidentally mixing up your taser with your service revolver and killing them, and erring on the side of not summarily executing 13-year-old boys for running away from them. You might think that, but you'd be wrong, because no group is more committed, it seems, to making the case for defunding the police than the police themselves. As I sat down to record this morning, I thought, a verdict is going to be in at any minute. I should check. It's not. No verdict yet. I am praying the jury returns a guilty verdict. And I'm praying, and that's rare for me because I am not a praying man, but I am making an exception here. I am praying that the cracks we all saw in this trial, in the blue wall of silence, cops testifying against a cop, I am praying that those cracks widen and grow and the wall of blue silence collapses. And then while I was online, I thought maybe I should check to see if there's been another mass shooting since the last mass shooting, which was 10 minutes ago. We were all so anxious to return to normal after more than a year of rolling COVID lockdowns. And here we are, the new normal, same as the old normal. Well, our normal, our national normal, our national sickness, guns and gun fetishists and gun violence. Joe Biden said it best.
This has to end. It's a national embarrassment. It is a national embarrassment what's going on. And it's not only these mass shootings that are occurring. Every single day, there's a mass shooting in the United States if you count all those who were killed out in the streets of our cities and our rural areas. It's a national embarrassment and must come to an end.
You know, I think that actually might be the first time we've heard Joe Biden's voice on this podcast. He's right. It is an embarrassment, a national embarrassment. One of many. Police violence, national embarrassment. Our healthcare system is a national embarrassment. Our inaction on climate change, a national embarrassment, and a danger to the world. Kids in cages, a national embarrassment still. Student loan debt, national embarrassment. Laws that make it a crime for parents to provide gender-affirming care to their trans kids proposed in Texas, and laws that require schools to report kids to their parents if they're caught displaying gender non-conforming behaviors at school, a law proposed in North Carolina, an embarrassment. And our pot laws. It's 420. Let's talk about our pot laws for a second. Our pot laws. Getting better state by state. They're legalizing pot in New York State. Good to see. But our pot laws really are an embarrassment. And I got to say, as a Democrat who voted for Joe Biden, I'm embarrassed by his opposition to legalizing marijuana federally. You know, I was at a White House reception for Pride back before Obama came out in favor of gay marriage, back before Biden came out for same-sex marriage and kind of boxed Obama in on the issue. Obama had said he was evolving on the issue of marriage equality, so I brought buttons to that party, little tasteful ones, perfect for lapels, buttons that said "evolve already" on them, and I passed those buttons out. Biden showed up at the end of that party, and I gave him one. Dr. Biden showed up too, Jill Biden, and Terry gave her one. I feel like we need to go back to the White House and pass out those buttons again, "evolve already," but about weed this time. Not that I'll get another invitation to a White House reception. I didn't get another one after passing out those buttons the first time, and I imagine I'm on some sort of White House universal do not invite list now for that, and perhaps all sorts of other reasons. Like laws that allow cops to pull people over for having air fresheners hanging from their rearview mirrors or busted taillights. Like stop and frisk policies, pot laws, laws that criminalize recreational use of marijuana. Those laws give cops a license to stop, harass, confront, detain, plant evidence on, and as we've seen again and again, kill people. People of color, black people in particular, are disproportionately arrested and prosecuted and thrown in jail for pot use. According to Normal, African Americans are arrested for pot possession at 4 times the rates of whites, even though both groups use pot at the same rate. In 2020, just in New York City alone, 94% of people arrested for pot possession were people of color in a city that is 43% white. If a cop can stop and arrest someone because the cop claims that person smells like pot, none of us are safe from police harassment. But let's not kid ourselves. These laws are really a license for the police to harass at will black and brown people. They always have been. They always will be, so long as they remain on the books. Recreational pot is legal in white-ass white Alaska right now, but possession remains a felony in Alabama, which is why we need action at the federal level to decriminalize, legalize marijuana in all 50 states. And it's a fucking no-brainer, low-hanging fruit for a Democratic administration. 80% of Democrats support legal weed, as do more than 50% of Republicans, 55% in some polls. It'll be embarrassing, to borrow that word from Joe Biden, it will be very embarrassing if Democrats can't get this done and can't get it done now. All right, a little bit of business before we get to your calls. I'm excited to announce that I'm going to host one of the Hump greatest hit screenings, the first, Saturday, May 1st. Let's all get together, watch some of the sexiest, kinkiest, dirtiest, funniest short films in the last 16 years together live on Zoom with me and my mean lesbian boss. Get your tickets to that at humpfilmfest.com. And a special announcement for Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers. Starting May 6th, I will be hosting a new virtual lunchtime get-together on the regular for Magnum subscribers only, called Sack Lunch, a live video hangout, free for Magnum subscribers. We're going to get together. We're going to have lunch. We're going to talk about that week's Lovecast. I'm going to hear your thoughts. We can talk. Subscribe to the Magnum version of the Savage Lovecast now at savagelovecast.com, and we will send you an invitation to the very first Sack Lunch on May 6th. All right, coming up on today's show, Happy Infertility Awareness Week, everybody. My guest on the Magnum today, very fitting, it's environmental and reproductive epidemiologist Dr. Shauna Swan, author of Countdown, which looks at how all the toxins that we're pumping into our environment are messing with our fertility and our genitals, people. Good thing it's also 420. Again, you might need a little pot after hearing that interview. It is distressing. Also, we have two separate callers this week asking me about hiring a unicorn. All that on today's show. Stay tuned. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. You make fixes around the house, why not fix your ED too? Roman's licensed healthcare professionals can help you find the best treatment. Visit GetRoman.com/savage for $15 off your first order. That's GetRoman.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
So Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth, this is it. This is my quarantine sex cess story. I'm married to a woman I met many, many years ago, 30 years ago, and we both really like sex. But we were not clicking. We could not figure out a way to make it work properly for both of us. A couple of days ago, well, a couple of months ago now, it's been about 8 weeks, I brought her this idea of FLR, female-led relationship, where she would be in charge. Dan, when I tell you she took to it, she jumped right in. She has decided, and let's be clear, I asked her, that she would very much like to cuckold me. She's already talking to a bull. Our sex life has gone from once a week and kind of begrudging to a daily tease fest. She's coming to bed at the end of the day, waking me up because I have to get up earlier than her most days, so that we can have sex, because she's so turned on by all these ideas. We're talking like we've never talked. We've turned the TV off. We can't wait to spend more time with each other. This is, without question, the greatest time of my life. And I've never been happier. And I wouldn't even know what I wanted if it wasn't for you. Thanks, Dan.
There are success stories, and then there are crushing it stories. And it sounds like you two are crushing it. Anybody else out there who's curious about FLR, female-led relationships, and wants to do a little bit of reading before you start exploring, I'd recommend Key Barrett's books. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for sharing. If you want us to open next week's Lovecast with your sex success story, your sex-cess story, give us a call, share it. We might open the show with it before we get to the problems. Now, on to this week's problems.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 40-year-old woman in a stable 22-year relationship with a male partner calling from Toronto. During the pandemic, a friendship I had made at the pool with a man in his early 50s, who also has a long-term partner, has become very special to me. And with pools closed here over the past months, he and I have resorted to taking long afternoon walks together as a way of staying active and feeling less socially isolated from friends, etc. He has become friends with my partner and my kids, and I have met his wife several times, and she was kind and welcoming to me. I had envisioned we'd all become better friends once social restrictions are lifted. Recently, however, I disclosed on a walk with my friend that prior to having children 8 years ago, my relationship with my partner was monogamous. I valued being able to talk with him authentically, as he had also been quite open about sharing his relationship history. Next time I saw him, he admitted that this disclosure had gotten him thinking about whether the two of us might be able to have a sanctioned affair and that he had feelings for me. I acknowledged a mutual attraction, but I expressed immediate pessimism and concern that this would work out if he did not already have this type of relationship with his wife. I said I didn't want to lose our friendship and that I thought we should keep things as they were and be careful not to let things cross a line. He went away and consulted with some of his close friends. He watched a video by you on monogamy, and then he told me by text that he decided to start having a conversation with his wife about this. I said I was nervous, that I was worried she would feel threatened by me and we wouldn't be able to stay friends. I said I really didn't want that to happen, but he said if he didn't tell her, he would end up lying and sneaking around. So he told her, and it did not go well, but he said it did lead to some important conversations on their end. Now, just as I have predicted, he has texted me to say that we can no longer be in contact. He said he hopes that that will change and that he is glad he started this dialogue, and he has thanked me several times. He has not apologized to me, and now I'm left feeling like I have been used as a catalyst to create a change in his marriage, and I am now collateral damage. I feel really sad about losing this friendship that had come to be important to me, and I don't know what to say in response to him. Of course, I don't expect our friendship to be his priority, but I feel kind of harshly dismissed when I don't think I did anything wrong. Should I have handled this any differently? Is there anything I should say to him at this point? I just want my friend back, and I worry it is totally ruined now. Is there anything I can do?
So you told this friend of yours that you didn't want to fuck him if it meant potentially losing the friendship, that it wasn't worth the risk, that you valued him as a friend too much, and you asked him not to bring it up with his wife, not to talk about it with his wife. And then he consulted with friends and watched me talk about non-monogamy and then brought it up with his wife. And what you feared might happen, that you would be exiled from his life, his wife would feel threatened, that all came to pass. And you didn't just warn him one time not to go there, not to do this. It wasn't worth it for you to lose his friendship, to get to fuck him wasn't worth it. You warned him more than once. And he did it anyway, because he obviously valued potentially getting to fuck you more than he valued your friendship and was willing to risk your friendship, being able to have you in his life for the prospect of getting to have his dick in you with his wife's permission, which he didn't get. And as you predicted, she was so threatened by this development that he's had to cut you off, cut you out of his life. You have every right to be angry. You have every right to feel hurt and discarded. You ask me what you can do now. Well, you can't just be angry forever. Go ahead and be mad. You sound super sad. I think you need to stir a little anger into your sadness and direct that anger at your former friend. And maybe you need to put it in an email or put it in a text. Just tell him how upset you are that he went and did what you told him not to do and what you feared might happen happened. And it cost you his friendship, which you valued more than his dick, but he didn't value your friendship more than the prospect of getting to sleep with you. Be angry. And then let it go. What do you do now? You know, if you want to have this friendship, if you want to have him back in your life again someday, what do you do now? What's your best course of action in the short term? It's to hang way the fuck back. Send him that one text, send him that one email, and then don't reach out to him again. Respect the boundary that his wife has asked him to draw for her emotional comfort. And it might be that when she sees that you're capable of respecting that kind of boundary, that she may grow more comfortable with the idea of having you back in their lives again, because she knows that you will respect that boundary, even if it's personally painful for you to respect the boundary that he's had to lay down at his wife's request. What that will signal to her is that if you do come back into his life as a friend, you will continue to respect boundaries that are established for her comfort, which would include the boundary of "don't fuck my husband." But the only way to demonstrate to her that you can respect her boundaries and as a friend prioritize their relationship in a way that even he seemed incapable of for a moment is to exit his life and wait. And you may be invited back into his life. You can put that in your email, put that in your text message. Hopefully at some point in the future, we can reestablish our friendship in a way that your wife is comfortable with it, because I wouldn't want to do anything that made your wife feel uncomfortable. Articulate that. On the off chance that he's sharing this email with his wife or that she is looking at his emails or text messages, put that in there explicitly. And then go find a better friend. Go make another friend. And we're coming out of the pandemic, hopefully, as more people get vaccinated, as more sane people get vaccinated, and you will be able to make new friends, have new social contacts. You feel his absence acutely because friends were hard to make. Friends were hard to see during the pandemic, and you were able to make this friendship, establish this bond, and spend a lot of time with this guy on these walks. And so that leaving your life in this way, pretty acutely painful at this moment. It will become less painful over time. You will make new friends. You will make friends who respect your boundaries. And hopefully, when you make those new friends, you will miss him less. And then when the day comes when you're welcome back into their life, you may not even want to enter back into their lives. You may not want to reestablish this friendship because you have other better friends who are capable of respecting your boundaries and listening to the things you have to say about what you would like them to say or not say to their friends or spouses about you. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMG Yes. This week, OMG Yes and Indiana University researchers published a new paper in the scientific journal PLOS-1 about the techniques women discover to experience more pleasure from vaginal penetration. One main finding in this new study is that 83% of women really enjoy when the penis, finger, or toy is not thrusting in and out of the vagina, but rather staying inside during PIV sex, penis and vagina sex. This means the partner's body stays in contact with the clitoris with a rocking motion, not a thrusting motion. The 7,000 women in the study had discovered ingenious techniques to get this kind of pleasure with their partners, like leg wrapping, which is a kind of leg bear hug, sealing, which is leaning forward on top and taking all the weight off your knees. And then there's pivoting, thigh riding, broadening, angling, and so many more techniques. Read the new paper for free at omgyes.com/findings. And see if these techniques that you could read about might improve your sex life and improve PIV for you and your partner. And lastly, OMG Yes is hiring. They're looking for experienced leaders in design, content, product management, research science, and marketing to help build the next phase of the movement. If that sounds like a dream job for you or someone you know, get in touch at omgyes.com.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old queer female living in Western Canada, and I need help dealing with my in-laws. My husband and I have a 1-year-old son with a peanut allergy. At this point, he hasn't had an anaphylactic reaction, but he gets hives covering his face and needs to be medicated to bring down the swelling. We've informed my in-laws about our son's peanut allergy probably around 10 times, whether it's casually over dinner or in the context of leaving our son with them to babysit and putting out his medication. My in-laws have now watched our son a handful of times, and we're transitioning into a routine where they will watch him once a week.
The other day we were having breakfast together and my mother-in-law asked, does the baby like peanut butter? Would he like this? I was shocked. When I realized she was serious, I began to fucking fume inside. I couldn't believe they had been watching him and had no recollection of the peanut allergy. My husband brought up the incident, asking them, do you really not remember this allergy? They got extremely defensive, asking how dare we accuse them of not being competent and comments along those lines. We never accused them of anything. We just wanted to get to the bottom of how they could possibly have no memory of it. They also said untrue things to my husband, such as that they had never fed the baby anything other than what I had provided for them to feed him, which is just so far from the truth. Like, I came home from work the other day and they were like, oh, we gave him some of our muffin. We hope that's okay. My response was, as it always is, yes, he can eat anything as long as you know the ingredients and there are no peanuts. It's important to note they are in their 70s and my mother-in-law has expressed concern to my husband about my father-in-law forgetting things. So it's already a sensitive topic. Leaving the conversation off on a rocky note and understanding it is a tough subject, we gave it a couple weeks to determine how to move forward. 2 weeks later, we called them to touch base. The conversation went even worse. There were lots of tears once again. My mother-in-law said she doesn't feel comfortable saying anything in front of me anymore, specifically me, because I will nitpick and deem her incompetent. That's not even kind of fair to say, because I've never nitpicked anything they've done ever. In fact, this is the first time I've ever fucking brought up any concern I've had about them watching our son. They also mentioned their word will go and tell everyone and all their friends will hear about how incompetent they are. We haven't told anyone. Basically, they made it entirely about them playing the victims and even made comments to turn my husband and I against each other. I was hoping they would come back with an apology, maybe asking us to teach them more about the allergy so they're better informed moving forward. My husband thinks they're fine to watch our son and that if anything, it's a communication issue. This is possible. If I'm being honest, I don't think they've ever really listened to me and there have been countless times where they've forgotten important things I've told them about myself in the past. Even though it's hurtful, I usually just drop it. But this time I can't. Dan, what do I do? We value our relationship and we want our son to have this quality time with his grandparents, but I'm also so frustrated. I know my in-laws love and would never intentionally harm their grandson, but I'm concerned. If we do come to the conclusion we don't feel comfortable with them watching him, it could very well ruin our relationship and it would be heartbreaking. How do we come back from this? Please help.
You sound like an anxious person. I'm not saying you don't have something real to be anxious about, but it's possible that your in-laws are picking up on and reacting negatively to your anxiety, your legitimate anxiety for the safety of your child. I think this is a job for your husband. Maybe your husband and a doctor or a couple of YouTube videos that he needs to really impress upon his parents that this is real and this is potentially life-threatening. And for him to do it on his own, to divorce it from their reactivity to you or your personality or whatever the ongoing conflict might be or the simmering conflict that you weren't really aware of or aware of how they felt about you until this pushed it. And, you know, you may be accidentally pushing some of their buttons about their own anxieties, about aging and forgetfulness, and of course they don't want you to think that they did something intentionally that may have put your child at risk, even though they did something out of probably just getting old and forgetful that did put your child at risk. And of course your child's safety has to be your top concern. So your husband goes in with the information that they need and impresses upon them the severity of this situation, the risk and the danger. And when they watch your kid, make sure they know, or your husband should make sure they know what the symptoms are of anaphylactic shock and that the meds are on hand so that they can do something about it in an emergency if indeed they need to. And if they feed your kid peanuts or something that might have peanuts in it again, then you don't let them watch your kid on their own, not to punish them, but to protect your child, not from their malice, but from their forgetfulness, which is, as the peanut allergy is an affliction that your son has to live with. Old age, forgetfulness, senility, dementia, those may be afflictions that they are currently struggling with and feeling very insecure about. And the confrontation with you about this became something that they projected their anger onto, not anger with you necessarily, but anger about where they're at at this particular moment and what they're going through, their afflictions. You've got to approach this in a way that makes it not about your personality versus their personality, you judging them or shaming them, but just about how all of you can work together to protect your kid who has a peanut allergy while still allowing him to have a relationship with his grandparents who may be forgetful. That might mean no feeding your kid anything at all. That may mean when they're together with him or they come over to watch him, it's after mealtime and the kid's going to bed and there are no snacks, of course, in your house that would be dangerous for your kid and grandparents aren't allowed to bring any over. There are ways you can get creative that allow for them to have a relationship that is controlled and that prioritizes your son's safety and your security as a parent, that you're doing everything you can to protect him while still allowing him to have a relationship with his forgetful, defensive grandparents. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Roman, a men's health company providing medication for ED, prescribed online and delivered to your door. Here on the Lovecast, we take ED seriously. It causes both men and women to suffer, but we are so lucky that there is safe, effective medication available. So fellas, if you've been putting it off, it's time to take care of it. And Roman makes it easy to do so. Go to GetRoman.com/Savage now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/Savage and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/Savage now and you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, get started today and you'll save $15 off your first order of ED treatment.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. I'm an early 40s gay man in a large city who was recently vaccinated and recently, for the first time in a long time, hooked up with a stranger. I was being very careful for the longest, but I was vaccinated. So anyway, I ate his ass for quite a long time. And then the next day, the next morning, and this has never happened to me, I was very, very sick, and I thought it was COVID, honestly, because it had been a couple of weeks. I didn't really know what to think, so I laid low. I was eating healthy, and I was fine after roughly probably 36 hours, and I'm fine now, and everything's great, but I guess my question is, do those two things have anything to do with each other? It's never happened to me before, but it was also a super random thing to just be sick.
I got vaccinated and then spent about 36 hours in bed. It really knocked me flat. I got the Johnson & Johnson one shot, no blood clots for me. I'm fine. But I was chills, aches, pains, blinding headaches for 36 hours. Totally worth it. I would do it again. Sounds like you got vaccinated and then 2 weeks later, you ate some ass. And then the next day, you got sick 36 hours in bed for you at that moment. It's unlikely that that was a delayed reaction to the vaccination. Most people who've had the kind of reaction to the vaccination that I've had, who kind of got, I guess, a mild case, as so our immune systems would kick into gear and protect us from more severe cases of COVID-19, happens right away. I got vaccinated in the morning. That evening, I started to feel crappy. You got vaccinated 2 weeks later, you ate some ass the next day, you felt crappy. Could have been a coincidence. Also, could have been COVID. It takes some weeks for the full protecting effects of the vaccines to kick into gear. So it's within the realm of possibility that you got exposed to COVID and the vaccine wasn't giving you the protection that you needed or that it would ultimately give you in the end yet. And you came down with COVID. You might want to go get a COVID-19 test to rule that out. You can also, you don't list your symptoms, would have been helpful to determine what exactly was going on here. There are also things that you can expose yourself to eating ass, you know, syphilis, gonorrhea, herpes, the big STIs, Also, E. coli, salmonella. Salmonella in particular can, I mean, E. coli can kill you. Salmonella, you can knock you fat. They can both put you in bed for a few days. You might want to talk to your healthcare provider and not your snarky sex advice podcast host about what that was and get tested. It is a risk. Eating ass is a pleasure. There are risks. There are risks associated with almost all pleasurable things that we human beings do. People go snowboarding for fun, slam into trees, die. People eat ass for fun, get salmonella, it's not pleasant. Or get oral syphilis, it's not pleasant. We weigh the risks and the benefits, and we roll our dice and move our mice, and we decide what risks we're willing to shoulder. So my money here is not on a reaction to the vaccine. That would have happened right away. Could have been salmonella, could have been E. coli. If it was either of those things, you might still need to be treated so that you are not infectious. Go see your doctor. Also, could have been COVID, or maybe you had the flu, which is still a thing that people get. A lot fewer people are getting it because of social distancing, because of masking. You know, I for one hope that after we get on the other side of this pandemic, that masking sticks around. You see in Japan, people who have colds, people who have the flu, who have to travel, have to go to work, will wear masks to protect other people so they don't spread the infection. I would love that to take root in our culture and for people to take those steps to protect their friends and their neighbors and the other people who might be on the subway or bus with them when they're sick but can't stay home. So you called your sex advice podcast host. I'm glad you did. Thanks for the call. Now you need to call your doctor and make an appointment. Trying to balance work, home, relationships, and everything else is challenging for everyone. On top of our everyday obligations, we have to deal with underlying fear and uncertainty from the pandemic, with many of our normal support systems no longer in place, no longer as easily available to us. Working with a therapist can give you that support you're missing right now, support you may have been missing or needing even before. Having someone to talk through your worries with and help prioritize what's really important can work wonders. Because now, more than ever, it's a good idea to seek out a little extra help for our busy, demanding, stressy lives. I recommend therapy on this show all the time, and Talkspace makes it so much easier to get therapy in your life. Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform that has thousands of licensed therapists trained in over 40 specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, and more. Your therapist at Talkspace can help you set and achieve your goals. Talkspace is secure and it's private, using the latest end-to-end bank-grade encryption technology to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener to this podcast, you'll get $100 off your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get $100 off your first month and to show your support for the show. That's SAVAGE at Talkspace.com.
Hi, Dan. Just wondering if there's any medically backed way for people to achieve natural safe penis enlargement. Everything that anyone could ever research is heavily search engine optimized on the internet. It's all ads. There's very little evidence or this clinical studies seemingly dedicated to this. So I was just wondering if for natural, like, you know, there's traction extenders, like, what is it? I'm sure there's a bunch of them, but like size genetics or like something like that. Can you have any doctor validate that any of these actually work? Are there any side effects? I'm sure tons of owners of penises would like to know. And not that I'm having any incredible need for such a contraption, but just curious.
I want to say nothing works and you just have to accept the penis that you have. But the Mayo Clinic says that stretching works. You use the word traction. There are traction devices for penises. They're actually recommended to men who are suffering from Peyronie's disease, which is a buildup of plaque or scar tissue in the shaft of the penis and the erectile tissues that can cause a penis to bend or go off at an angle. And for most men who have Peyronie's disease, it's not a problem. But if it gets worse and worse, which it does in a small percentage of cases, it can make erections painful. It can make penetrative sex impossible. So there are these traction devices that are recommended to men who have Peyronie's disease that basically trap your head of the penis in the top and then you like crank it up and stretch it out. It's like a medieval rack that they would torture people on, but a little one for your dick. That can add a half an inch, maybe an inch, if you do it consistently and regularly, but only maybe. And these devices cost $500,000, and using them is really awkward and, I imagine, unpleasant and uncomfortable. So I would recommend, instead of wasting your money on lotions or potions or surgeries that don't work or interfere with function or putting your penis in a little medieval torture rack designed just for penises, that you accept your penis and enjoy the penis that you got. And if you want to bring in supplements instead of pills, instead of those kinds of supplements, bring in supplements, bring in the cavalry, bring in your fingers, bring in your tongue, bring in your forearms, bring in sex toys, bring in cock sheaths, bring in strap-ons. There are lots of ways to play with having a bigger dick without torturing or maiming the genetic, biological, flesh and blood dick that you were born with.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech savvy at-risk youth. This is a longtime listener calling from Toronto, Canada. I am a hetero cis female, 28 years old, and my boyfriend and I have been talking about having threesomes. He's interested in me and another woman, and I'm interested in him and another man. I think we've both decided that the best way of going about this is to hire a professional just to mitigate any jealousy issues, but also because I feel like I would be awkward around another woman sexually. Like, I haven't really like thought about having sex with women in that way, but I want to be like a good sport for him. I'm hoping that a professional would help guide both of us through the session, make me feel more comfortable, include me really well, and also kind of just show me how to participate and make it fun for him and vice versa. So my question really is, how do I find these people? It doesn't seem like searching on Google is a good idea. And also, what should I ask this person when I finally do find them? Like, what are good questions to help us narrow down who would be a good fit for us?
Some straight people will have three ways where, you know, it's kind of a pile and there may be some incidental or even intentional or sustained same-sex contact. I guess that would fall under the banner of heteroflexibility in that kind of moment. Other straight couples, straight people, will have three ways where the two same-sex participants orbit the opposite-sex participant like moons of Jupiter. They never touch each other. They don't get any closer than they were when they were created. You can have that kind of three-way, and you can find a professional who understands that that's the kind of three-way that you're comfortable having, so long as you communicate that to the pro. You ask if there's a pro out there who can guide you, and actually what you need to do is guide the pro. You need to tell the pro what it is that you want, what it is that you're comfortable with, what your expectations are, and then the pro can decide whether they would be a good match for you. You don't want to waste somebody's time. There are some people out there who do sex work who complain about the, you know, time wasters, people who may be jacking off, maybe masturbating about the thought of getting with a sex worker, and it fuels their fantasy to have an interaction with a sex worker about a hypothetical date, a hypothetical booking that's never going to happen. You don't want to be that kind of person. You want to dive in, share the information efficiently about what you want, what your expectations are, what you hope to get from this encounter, and then invite them to share what their expectations of you as a couple would be. And so long as you're really clear that you want the moons of Jupiter threesome and not the lots of incidental same-sex contact. You know, there are a lot of people out there, a lot of opposite-sex couples who go to pros or search for unicorns because the woman is particularly interested in having a bisexual experience, having a same-sex experience. And a lot of pros who are approached by couples will at least come into the interaction, come into the negotiations with the assumption that you may want some girl-on-girl play or girl-on-girl contact. You just need to be really clear that that's not what you want. That's not what you're after. This is about your boyfriend, and you want the moons of Jupiter booking. You don't want the three people in a heap rolling all over each other booking. And you can have that, and you will have that, so long as you are clear about that being what you want, what you're after. You may encounter a sex worker or two who's not interested in a Moons of Jupiter three-way. I think they would be rare. Good sex workers, and you want a good one, are all about meeting the needs of their clients and meeting their clients where they are. But they can't meet you where you are if they don't know where you are. You're expecting them to guess where you are. Be clear, be detailed, and have fun.
Hi, Dan Savage and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I need your help planning what I hope will be a quarantine success story. My husband and I have been dabbling in monogamish activities for a little while, but unfortunately, a lot of that has been curtailed due to COVID. We have done a threesome experience with a man. We have gone to some sex clubs, and I have played with women there. But we're really dying to do a classic two girls, one guy, three-way. And we haven't been able to because of COVID. And we've been talking and fantasizing a lot about it. And that sort of morphed into talking about potentially hiring an escort. I think that that would be really sexy. He does too. So we talk about that a lot. And we have just sort of dipped our toes into trying to plan that now that we are vaccinated. And so his birthday is coming up in a few weeks. And I thought rather than waiting even longer that I might just go ahead and plan one for his birthday. And I know that he will be okay with it. We have talked a lot about it. I've told him that he has free rein to plan sexy surprises. And he has insinuated to me that I should just go ahead and pick an escort and plan something. So I feel like this will be a welcome surprise. I found a beautiful, curvaceous woman who's an independent sex worker, and we've been chatting. She seems great. I'm super excited. But my question is, I'm not quite sure how to roll out the surprise. There's so many different versions that I can think of that would be fun or sexy. I'm getting us a hotel downtown in the city where we live. But I don't know, you know, do we get a drink at the bar and I have her come walk up and sit with us? Do I leave him at the bar for a little bit and meet her upstairs and have him come up and, you know, just walk into a room with the two of us there? Do I tell him when we get to the hotel just so he can have a little bit of advance notice and, you know, maybe we can have some fun in anticipation of her arrival? Do I write him a note, a little letter, and pass that to him and tell him what's about to happen when we first get to the hotel over dinner? There's a lot of options.
I'm wary of insinuations. You say that you're husband has insinuated that it would be all right with him for you to plan this as a sexy surprise. And that insinuation came during a conversation where you told him he could plan one for you as a sexy surprise. I think you want clarity, not insinuations, not hints, before you set up a sex date for someone where they may feel pressured to go through with something in the moment that, for reasons that may have nothing to do with the person that you picked or anything else, but in that moment, they may not be ready for or up for. And if you've gone to all the time and trouble of getting a hotel room and getting a sex worker, it puts a kind of pressure on your husband to go through with it, whether he wants to or not. And so I don't think this is a great idea, just because the risks of it falling apart in the last moment are high and you wouldn't want to hurt the sex worker's feelings. On the other hand, a sexy surprise is one way to keep the spark alive. And if that's what he's told you that he wants, and again, no insinuations, statements, clarity, you need him to use his words. If he's invited you explicitly to surprise him sometime with a sex worker or with an additional bonus partner for a three-way, well, then I guess you have his consent to go through with it. So I guess I'm just bumping on that word, he has insinuated. It may be that this is something that you said that you wanted. You were up for this kind of sexy surprise. And to avoid making you feel uncomfortable about this being something you wanted, he, you know, just allowed you to assume that it might be something that he wanted Two, so first get clarity. And then if it's clear, if he absolutely positively wants you to set something like this up for him sometime, then you can go for it. I think part of what's fun about a planned three-way, about a date for a sexual adventure, is the anticipation of it. A surprise can also be fun and sexy, but telling him that morning, telling him over drinks before the sex worker arrives, that gives him some time to anticipate it. You know your husband better than I do. If you think he would really enjoy that anticipation, whether it was a couple of days worth of anticipation and the sex you guys would be having in the run-up to that moment, or a few hours of anticipation that he would enjoy, or if you think that he would get much more pleasure from the surprise, from the shock of this person walking up to him in the bar, or this person being in the room with you when he came up to the room from the bar or the restaurant or the gym, well, then you can go for that. I definitely know people who've done this exact thing to great success. So I guess my worst case scenario disorder is kicking in a little bit here, because I generally come down on the side of no surprises when it comes to sex, that a surprise can make somebody feel coerced. If you know for a fact that your husband wouldn't feel coerced in that moment, would feel empowered to bail or ask for a rain check if he wasn't feeling it, or he wasn't feeling her, if the person you think is awesome and a great choice doesn't appeal to him, that there's a graceful way for him to bow out. And you should say that to the sex worker in advance. Like, I'm planning this as a surprise. So if he's not feeling it, no hard feelings, we'll pay you for your time. If she's a pro, she'll appreciate that kind of honesty and directness, and of course being paid whether anything happens or not, then you should go for it. So I guess this is my blessing with all sorts of qualifications and a little bit of homework and advance work and screw diligence that you need to do before you set this in motion. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Onina Nelson tweets, post-vaccine high libido is a thing, but I doubt it's a side effect of the vaccine. It's the relief, lack of stress, and new freedom the vaccine gives us. That improved mental health can improve libido. Very good point. Dennis DiClaudio tweets, I'm getting back into the Savage Love Cast podcast. Forgot how much I enjoyed having at Fake Dan Savage's reasoned humanity in my life. Was a regular listener since way back near its beginning episodes, but stopped listening when I became obsessed with our global trash fire. Welcome back, Dennis. It's good to have you. And finally, Diana Edelman tweets, check my bank statement, saw charge for the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, smiled and thought, worth every penny, only charge I'm happy to see. Well, Diana, you just found out at the top of this week's show that your subscription to the Magnum Savage Lovecast gets you more now. I hope you'll be joining us for the first sack lunch on May 6th. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And a big thank you to everyone out there who posted to social media about the show this week. We really appreciate it. And now your response calls.
Hey, Dan, this is a response to the caller who Googled some guy she wants to go out with and found out he broke into some cars 10 years ago. Your advice was great, but something occurred to me. I would recommend to her to just have your radar on high alert for addiction issues and alcoholism. I am a former addict and alcoholic who's in a 12-step program, and so I know a lot of former addicts and alcoholics, and, you know, that's something that an addict might do for various reasons when caught in the grips of their addiction. So I would just be on high alert for that and go out with him and check him out and just pay close attention to his behavior around drugs and alcohol, because maybe he's clean and sober now too and he's over that, or maybe he was and is still an active addict. And yeah, that's also kind of a deal breaker.
Hey, Dan. Calling with a comment to the woman who was calling about her mom receiving an email scam message recently. She mentioned that in the title of the email, the scammer included her mom's password that she uses commonly across a couple websites. Go change all those passwords. Like, that'll solve the problem immediately. That'll, you know, hopefully put your mom's mind at ease. I also got a very similar email, went and changed my passwords. I, like Dan, don't really look at porn and would rather read erotica, so I wasn't worried about it. But after I did that, the email stopped.
This is a response to the caller in 755 who said that the vaccine made him and his friends super horny. The vaccine made me super horny, and I know it's because I am just thinking about all the people that I'm going to be able to fuck once the world opens up. So maybe that's what's going on. But either way, let's all get vaccinated.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get your questions and comments to us. You can call 206-302-2064, or you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Like I said at the top of the show, I'll be hosting Hump's Greatest Hits, a screening on Saturday, May 1st. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get tickets to that screening that I'm hosting or another screening that might work better for your schedule. There are lots of screen times to choose from. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Shauna Swan on Twitter at Dr. Shauna Swan. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.